Welcome to CFO Talk. I'm your host, Steve Rosewald, Chief Learning Officer at CFO.University. Joining us today is Jesper Sorensen. He is the world's leading expert on the analytics business partner and the Chief Financial Officer at Avaloq, a fintech company in Zurich. Jesper started his career with IBM and then led finance teams at both DuPont and Oracle. He is also a co-founder of the Finance Analytics Institute. He received an economics degree from Aarhus University in Denmark and his MBA from the University of Leuven in Belgium. And as if that wasn't enough, he trained in strategy at Stanford University.
Hey, Steve. It's great to be here. Look forward for our conversation today.
I want to cover two things. I want to update us on the analytics business partner and where that's come from when we last talked in September, and then also talk about your new role as a CFO. At the Finance Innovation Excellence Summit last fall, you introduced us to the analytics business partner as a third generation business partner who provides analytics insight and foresight that will impact the future of our companies. Since then, what progress has been made in the analytics business partner role?
So really, the analytics business partner is where we're using both our soft skills, but also our hard skills to influence decisions and impact the strategic direction for the company, where we're applying analytics. That's a piece of it. But even more important, like when you're applying analytics, if you cannot communicate the analytics, like which is some of the soft skills, then it doesn't really matter. And you can go the other way around. You might be the best in communication, but if you have no insight to communicate, it doesn't matter either, right? So you need to have a balance there. And I think that's the important thing here. And then it's about analytics. And what we're talking about here is we're talking about the more advanced level of analytics, not Power BI analytics. It's not visualization, these kind of things. But when we talk about how much that we have advanced in as an analytics business partner since I spoke at the Phoenix last year, then I see a lot of progression in the part that is not necessarily advanced in the visualization piece of it. And that is also good because like creating visualizations using Power BI, Tableau, whatever it is, that gives the ability to automate things. And hopefully when you have automated these kind of things, you have more time to do the other parts of it. So that can actually be a journey as well. So what I see at the moment is that still we're pretty good in the finance community on the soft skills, communication, collaboration, understanding the business acumen, these kind of things. And we start to get into this, or we want to use visualization. A lot of companies start to implement visualization, either teams or visualization capabilities. And we did that a lot when I was at Oracle. We used a lot of effort on people to learn these skills, how to visualize data, how to build Power BI report. Of course, it was not Power BI because it was Oracle. So it was their own tool, right? But these kind of things. So I see a lot of progress there. But really getting to where we provide insight and foresight that is used for data-driven decisions, I don't necessarily see that yet. But hopefully that is to come when we start to visualize and thereby automate a lot of the reports that we have today because we start to use tools.
So you see it as kind of a stepping stone. Visualization, automation can lead to that next step of where we're creating all that insight that we need.
That is my hope that it's going in that direction. But again, as you said, there is components that you need to have in place in order you can get there. And that's some of the stuff that I talked about last year, where the start button in this one is the mindset. Like you want to make sure that people is having the right mindset.
The leading expert in the analytics business partner and a new CFO, you have this challenge of convincing your CEO and your board of directors to get the resources required to create a great analytics team and create this analytics business partner type role. Mm-hmm. How do you suggest we go about doing that?
It's almost like I scripted you to ask me that question because here in the back, you'll see there's two books and one of them in the bottom is actually a book that my friends, Robert Twirling and Larry Marcel and myself wrote a year ago, which is exactly about that. It's about how executives should act and embrace analytics and why a lot of them are failing in implementing analytics. And the important thing that for the CEOs is really to understand what is analytics and what it can be used for, but also to understand why many is failing in this. And we talked in the last part of the book about some character that we called the analytics champion. And really the analytics champion is the one who generate this insight and foresight that they don't know. But as soon as they start to see this, they will use it to take decisions from. So this is really what you need to do. You need to find that analytics champion or these analytics champions in your company who can do this and show that to the business so they can see that we're generating value from using data to provide the insight and the foresight. And there's a few use cases with companies who manage to do this in very, very different sectors. One like a big Silicon Valley company, another one, a smaller museum in San Antonio. And analytics is for everyone. That's the important piece here. Analytics is not just for the big, big companies. It's for everyone. And everyone can do this either in-house, but you could also outsource your analytics today. If you can't get there yourself and you don't have the right people, maybe, and maybe you don't have the system, you could also outsource it.
Well, it kind of makes sense to take a first step to get some expertise in that you might not have. Now, this is completely unscripted, but I happen to have your book in front of me. And so I guess the answer to your question, and like I said, this was kind of impromptu, but what you had did, you sent this book to your board of directors and your CEO, I assume.
One of the reasons why I was hired as well for this position was also a lot of conversation doing the interview around analytics and how we develop this analytics culture. Of course, they knew about this as well. So we had a lot of those conversations.
At the Finex Summit last year, you said that there was a pretty significant gap in this analytics business partner role, and it had to do with tools, the analytics tools. Have we made any progress on that? And what's your suggestion for that area?
I call it the toolbox. And really to understand the toolbox is not just a tool. Like you can buy a tool, but who knows whether the tool can do exactly what you want it to do. So the toolbox really starts with the technique. I have a problem that I want to solve. But what is that technique that I need in order to solve that? That could be predictive analytics. Okay, if it's predictive analytics, then you need the tool that can help you with predictive analytics. If it's big data, AI-enabled analytics using big data, then you need a tool that can do that. If it's Monte Carlo simulation, then you need a tool that can run a Monte Carlo simulation. So it's not just one tool necessary. It could be one tool, but it's all coming from the technique and the problem that you want to solve. And this is, again, where we're using our mindset. A lot of us is modeling the future. And a lot of time we're super biased in how we do this. There's a lot of factors and we change them. But what you could do instead is that you can use predictive analytics to say what those factors will be in the future. But in combination with that, you could also use Monte Carlo simulation to guide you on a high case and a low case. And by doing this again, then you need a tool that can help you. And that's why it's not just to buy a tool. It's really to start with what is my problem? And what is the technique that I want to use to solve that problem? And then you figure out what is the tool. And the technique and the tool is what I combined called the toolbox. Yeah. And that one is the one where a lot of organizations are challenged because we all so often believe that the tool that can solve our issues is a visualization tool because we believe that's an analytics tool. Visualization tool is what visualization tools are. It's visualization tools, exactly what it's saying that it is. Analytics tools, it's something where you can do advanced analytics and you can find the insight and the foresight in the data, which is unbiased because you don't provide any input to it. You just let the algorithms in the system decide what the future should look like. And then, of course, when you do this, it's not just about taking decision based on that. You also need to take the decision based on what is the business telling you? What do you know about the business? So don't be blind about taking decisions just from data. You need to have that soft skill set as well, where you understand the business, you collaborate with the business, and you have a lot of communication going back and forth with the business. That's again, coming back to where we started with the hard and the soft skills.
If you were going to give one tip to your CFO peers on how to create this analytics-driven decision-making culture at their companies, what would you tell them to do?
I'm almost... I've sent you what kind of questions that you should be asking me, because that's the first book here that Robert and I wrote 2.5 years ago. The book is called Implementing Analytics Culture for Data-Driven Decisions. And there's four components, and I've talked about the mindset already. Mindset is the start button. If you don't have this mindset that we want to use analytics to tell the business something that they don't know, and when they know, they'll take the decision. If we don't have that, forget it. But if you have that mindset, then you need three other components. People. The right people, if you don't have the people who can do analytics, it doesn't matter. processes, here we're talking about two things in process. Data governance, if you don't have the data, it doesn't matter. If your data is horrible, you can't do it either. And then what we call the system governance is basically that you take the system based on data. And then the last one is the system. So mindset, people, process, system. And it's the lowest of the four that defines where you are. I might have the mindset. I might have the best people in the world who understand how to do these kind of things. I might have the best data in the world, but I have no system. I have no system that could do, for instance, predictive analytics or can do big data analytics, millions and millions of observations trying to figure out what is the insight and foresight in the data. Then it doesn't matter. And you can do the same exact the other way. If your data is horrible, but you have all the three others, you cannot do it. If you have great system, great data, right mindset, but the people is not there, you can't do it either. Then you can say, okay, maybe I could outsource it then. But in reality, it's those four components, and it's the lowest of them that define your level of analytic intelligence. And that's basically what we wrote the book about.
Well, you know what really is interesting that comes to mind now is that needs to be developed in sync with all four of those. You know, you can't just go hire a bunch of people and then not expect. So the investment, if you're smart about it, the investment is going to be in all four of those areas, keeping them kind of level set because you're only as strong as your weakest link.
And that is where we often run into the challenge, especially if we think about that we want to establish this and we need to hire some people who can do this, but we also need to buy a system. And some of the big guys who come in with these systems, they'll cost millions of millions. That's why I'm saying, like, you have the opportunity to outsource this, where you have the people and the system sitting on the other end. You pay, of course, for that. Or you could buy one of these boutique softwares that is very, very helpful, doesn't cost a lot, but it's really, really good and maybe even better than some of these big enterprise systems to do advanced analytics.
What I found, and I'm asked, you know, I did some work on this talking about, you know, with CFOs, where their analytics are. And you brought up a while back, you taught me, Steve, analytics is different than analysis. I think it was a professor at Stanford that kind of gave you that insight. But I think a lot of CFOs still get that confused. They think, I'm doing my analysis at the end of every month, and that's my analytics.
Because you can't take decision based on it. Like doing a variance analysis, it's fine. It's good. We need to do that. But you can't take any decisions. What is it that I need to do when my sales is down in Europe? Oh, maybe that is related to that there is a correlation between the sales is down and our customer satisfaction is down. But now you go into analytics because customer satisfaction, you start to correlate two things. Now it becomes, instead of being arithmetic, now it becomes mathematics. And that is where you get into analytics. And then mathematics can be different things. It needs to be something that is used for decision-making for it to be real analytics, because mathematics could also be something that you're doing in Power BI with some regression lines, maybe something like that. But at the end of the day, it needs to be something where you can take decision based on it for this one to be powerful and really what we call the highest level of analytics intelligence.
It's a really important thing for people to start thinking about, because otherwise they get in that old mindset of the four pillars you talked about, really say, oh, I kind of have those. I'm doing my month-end analysis and they kind of missing a really huge opportunity.
Yep.
That's great. Let's turn the tables a little bit and let's get on to your new role as a CFO at Avaloq. I just want to ask you a few questions that I think will help our audience kind of understand what this whole new CFO thing is like, just by some examples of what you're going through. So first, can you define what are your responsibilities as the CFO at Avaloq?
Avaloq is a company with 2,500 employees in the fintech world, more than 3,000 if we add the contractors. And then, of course, there's a finance team. And the finance team is, of course, accounting, tax, treasury. There's an FP&A team. There's a sales finance team. Then there's a few teams that you maybe normally don't have. One of them is DealHub. So really making sure that we create the right deals from pricing, but also from a cost perspective. Then an analytics team that we've created. And then a projects team, because one of the challenges that many organizations have is that they're really good at keeping what I call keeping the lights on, doing what we have done all the time. And if we want to improve, often we don't have time to do that. So there's nobody who is having bandwidth and focus and budget to do this. And if you don't have bandwidth and focus and budget, then it won't get done if there's something that you want to improve. Therefore, you need a team. And we have put a small team aside with four people where they run optimization projects.
Huh.
Because like there's no one, like the normal analyst or finance manager or director, they don't have time to do this because they have their monthly, weekly, daily, quarterly, yearly cadence of doing all kind of things, right? And there's never any time for anybody to run these projects. That's the reason why we created this team, because we want to advance.
How does a project get selected? So is it CEO on something? Is it we expect the return in this week? Or how do projects get done?
Different selections. One of them is, of course, if it comes from the board or if it comes from the CEOs, then it's having higher priority. But it could also be something in-house, internal in finance, where we want to improve a process that doesn't exist today. And then it's basically my leadership team who is selecting which of them that this group should focus on.
That's a good way to do it. You know, you're right. You know, projects really frequently end up being put on the person who has the least work at that time, which in finance, there's usually a cadence that doesn't leave that time.
Exactly.
But what is the biggest challenge that you didn't expect that you've had to face in this new role?
I don't know if I didn't expect it, but like coming in from this role, like in the past, as you described, I was vice president at Oracle leading a business finance team. So of course, stepping into the role of a CFO, there's elements that you have dealt with, but you have never been leading these kind of teams. So an accounting team or a tax team, I've never been leading an accounting team, or I've never been leading a tax team in the past. So of course, those were elements that I kind of knew them, but it is also something that you need to adapt to. But also, I think in the selection process of finding the next CFO today is very, very different maybe from 10 years ago. 10 years ago, you might have picked the accountant or the personal skills that I come in with. But in this case, I think today, there's much more focus on accounting. It's something that we need to be good at it. And the good thing is that when I came into this role, I have a really good accounting and tax team. So they're like, it's really, really good setup there. But they also knew this, that the hiring people, they also knew this. So both the board and the CEOs, they knew this. So therefore, they were looking for somebody who was having that next generation finance mindset, who can drive the strategic directions instead, both in the finance team, but also help the business drive the strategic direction. And I think that is maybe one of the elements that will be much more prioritized when the future CFOs are going to be picked.
I think that's a good point. Different skill sets that are much more related to business acumen, kind of using new tools, new ideas, data, you know, all that. And that doesn't always come out of the accounting background. Although I see accountants, you know, getting schooled up in that. But I think you're right. There's a transition taking place in what's expected of the CFO. And you are the poster child for that. That's great.
I didn't grow up in accounting, right? Got my first job in business finance. So I've never really been around that accounting route. But there's also people where they started their careers as an auditor and then moved into business finance. And that, again, there'll be a great profile as well. It doesn't have to be just one where you only have the business finance. But I think it becomes more and more important, if not the most important elements, that you have been around business finance in your career.
Can you share something about what you might do differently about the process of researching, accepting, and starting your new role as CFO?
There's always things looking hindsight that you knew, that you wish that you knew. And some of them is, of course, who is the team that you're coming in and going to lead? And what does that look like today? In my case, the CFO had left, unfortunately, had left already. So I came in kind of to an organization where I didn't knew about his vision, his mindset, why he has structured things the way that he has structured things. We have co-CEOs. So I only got the information through these guys. And again, they could, of course, tell how they saw things. But again, it's different from getting told something from the CEO level than if it was from the CFO level. I wish that I knew more about the people in the team before I started.
So the last question for you. I'm looking to accept a new job in the next few months, a CFO role. What advice would you give me, one piece of advice, before taking this new role?
The important thing as a new CFO is that you bring something to the table that is different from the past, because you want to impress the new organization with something that you're capable at doing. And a lot of time that can be a little bit of a challenge maybe in the beginning, but you want to make sure that you bring something. So in my case, it's really like what I like and what I really enjoy is to develop the finance organization. And I have my own framework on how we do these kind of things and how we build that skill set that I talked about, both the hard and the soft skill set. But that is just one thing. And a lot of people normally don't see that if you're out in the business. So it's also to bring something that is influencing the business, either the performance or the way that we're doing things in the business. And again, in my case, that could be coming into an organization like just benchmark, knowing what are the different benchmarks for how much R&D expenses that a company like this should have compared to the revenue, or how much should we spend on the admin expenses compared to our revenue, and how much should we expect salespeople to sell when they have this kind of tenure. If you come from a similar industry, you should know these kind of benchmarks. Like you could also have looked up beforehand competitive intelligence. How well are we performing compared to our competitors? That's also a way to get fast into the role and being able to challenge things. And then it could also be like just maybe there's something in the way that we're structured in this company. Could be like the way that we're structured here, we have some lack of ownership. Like you can also see that because the beautiful thing with the CFO is that we have access to everything because we can see it from our angle. It's not that we're only hidden away in the corner and you're only allowed to look at your financial data. You're also allowed to look at the structure of the company and what is our goals and how should we be structured in order to get to these goals. Those are elements that we should consider. Try to see if you can bring something to the table that is different than maybe what the company was having in the past. But I think if you have these kind of things, it's also something that you get hired based on.
Right.
Like doing the interview process, that's often something that CEOs are looking at. What is it that they would like to see in a new CFO? And those will be elements that they probably is already aware of.
That's a good point. You know, making sure you know where your niche is, what you bring to the table, understanding that clearly rather than kind of accepting a nice fancy role blindly, but knowing what you bring to the table, I think is really important.
Doing what we have done in the past, that's good. But we as newcomers to an organization needs to bring something to the table, right?
Well, we're glad to be able to deliver the type of thought process that you bring, you know, the analytics business partner, kind of now you're in a CFO role and it's really sharing your thought leadership on this is fantastic.
That wraps up today's CFO Talk.